Hey, this is a special situation today because I'm making an artistic choice to record with the window open. And it's raining a little bit outside. It's been storming a lot this morning. So you can probably hear a little trickle of rain. And birds chirping, it's springtime. It's a wonderful time of year. I love the rain. I love the birds. I love the plants. It's a season of rebirth. And that's pretty cool. I'm about that message. I'm about that messaging for sure. So I'm happy to be back. It's been a while. You know what? Okay. This is episode 30. Here we go. Okay, I almost forgot to do the intro. Doesn't matter. I've spent a little bit of time away from the podcast because after I did the last episode, it was pretty taxing, you know, honestly. The interview I did with my friend who was the assistant to Ghislaine Maxwell, if you listen to it and you listen to other episodes of this show, you know that it was, you know, a pretty big departure from the kind of episodes that I normally do, where I just, you know, talk about things and say whatever's on my mind. So it was fun for me to do a more produced episode, but it was something, you know, that I had never done before. And I guess I didn't really think about how much work it was going to be to put it all together. And then I did like a video too, a 4-video series, like a mini documentary kind of, where I really added a lot of extra stuff besides just the interview to try to put together a compelling, cool story that gave all of the information, all of the background, and all of the context. And I am working on, you know, feature length documentaries already. So that was like a good way for me to put something together the way that I like and get it out really fast. So it was a very gratifying experience, I would say. And you might be able to guess that anytime you talk about a controversial figure or a controversial subject, which Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein, of course, doesn't really get more like titanic of a people to be discussing. So like a lot of wacky people came out of the woodwork and were emailing me and writing comments on my videos, and it was pretty wild. But yeah, basically the story was that I, you know, met this guy, Rasmus, in New York in 2015, and he was living with Ghislaine Maxwell and working for her. And that didn't come to light until 2019. And as it turns out, I went to Ghislaine Maxwell's house and didn't even know it. So if you didn't catch that episode and you're interested in hearing about that whole subject and story, or if you want to see the videos, they're on my YouTube. So go ahead and check that out. Other than that, we are moving on officially. In other news, I did my taxes and that almost killed me. That was almost the end of my life this year, was having to do my taxes. And that is because I have multiple businesses that I am trying to do tax returns for on my own. I had this accountant that I was working with, and then he's like, it's really weird because I don't know how to hire an accountant. I was like, I talked to this guy, I consulted with him a couple times, like I paid for the consulting, and then I thought, okay, well, this guy will be my accountant. But it doesn't work like that. He's not my accountant. And you know, I was like, hey, I'm just wondering if you could help me on this tax stuff. And he was like, no. And I was like, good deal. So I was going alone. And I'm completely messed up my taxes completely. And then I was asking on the tax software I was using on one of my business returns, I was talking to the tax expert and I was like, hey, something isn't adding up here. Something isn't right. Can you help me figure this out? And the guy looked at it and he was like one of those people, that doesn't have good communication skills, I guess, he's a numbers guy. He can't communicate with human beings on an empathetic level. So he was just straight up. He was like, this is really bad. It's really, really bad. And the IRS is going to come knocking on your door sooner or later. And I was like, all right, so can you help me? And he was like, no, it's so messed up that I cannot help you. And I was like, so what am I supposed to do? And he was like, I don't know, but I can't be liable for this return. So I'm not going to help you. And I'm just going to get you a refund because I'd already filed it. And then he was like, yeah, you really messed up and you're going to have to redo this. And he actually said, my recommendation is you delete everything and just completely start over because it's so bad that it cannot be repaired. You're just going to have to completely start over. And it was it was a very desperate situation for me. I was like, oh my God, what have I done? What is happening? And then also how are you supposed to start a business in this country when you cannot, I'm an intelligent human being, I am. And I could not figure out how to file my own business return. It was just too complicated. The stuff didn't make any sense. Then I ended up reconnecting with a friend of mine from growing up who's an accountant now. And I was like, look, I'm in such a desperate situation. I really need your help. Can you just look at this and see what's going on? And she was like, yeah. And then she helped me do it. And it was a miracle. But I got in there and I was like, okay, so what do I put on this box? And she was like, okay, put this amount from this worksheet, but put it as a negative. And I was like, just put it as a negative. And she's like, yeah, put that as a negative. I'm like, how the fuck would I ever be able to figure that out on my own? Ever. I wouldn't. So in other words, the man tried to get me down and the man tried to tell me, don't even start a business because it's just going to be a huge pain in the ass and a headache. And I said, you know what? I will prevail. And that's what happened. I prevailed. I got it done and I didn't die as a result of having to do my taxes. So congratulations to me on that. I hope you guys have all had a better time doing your taxes, but I don't have high hopes that you did unless you have a good accountant, in which case I applaud you for being prepared. In other professional news, we finished up our black and white horror short that we shot last year. It's 17 minutes long and it's about kind of a femme fatale character that has a pretty twisty, turny story. The character is played by me and the script was written by me. And we're completely finished with it. And that's a great feeling. And I'm submitting it to a lot of cool genre festivals right now. And I'm going to be dropping the trailer. We're cutting the trailer for it as we speak. And probably by the time this episode comes out, the trailer will be on my Patreon. That's right. My patrons see it first. So if you're interested in seeing my works in progress and getting the first look at the trailer for my new short film, hit the Patreon, okay? Patreon.com/Raiden. So happy about that. Everything is good in my world. I'm honestly so happy too that I waited to do another episode until after we stopped talking about the Oscars. But now I'm going to just briefly touch on this by saying I did not watch the Oscars. I tuned in after word got around about the infamous slap, and I said, let me turn it on and see what happened. And you know, there's nothing to say. Everyone on Earth gave their two cents about this. And, you know, honestly, I'm not going to beat a dead horse, but that's what I'm saying. I'm glad that I waited long enough to let that controversy blow over before I came on here and had to give a hot take. That would have been very tempting, too. If I had recorded right after that happened, I would have been like, here's what I think. I'm so glad I didn't do that. It's another reason why I've got to choose my episodes sparingly. And also, I've got so many things that I'm working on. I just, I don't want to do podcast episodes just for the sake of doing podcast episodes. We've got to make it count, people. All right, now get ready for this. Get your mind right, get your vibe right, because this next part of this episode is going to be a whole new vibe for your day. This is a conversation that I had with my friend of a decade, Owen Harn. He's an actor. He's been in a ton of stuff. He's been in Vice Principals. He's been on True Detective. He's been on The Walking Dead. He's been on everything. Very interesting guy. Literally. Put your seatbelt on. Even if you're not in a vehicle, put your seatbelt on, because this interview is going to blow you out of your seat or out of your area. Okay? You get the point. Here we go. Owen Harn. Talk to you today because, number one, I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time on my podcast because you are a real life Florida man. And I think Florida man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's special.
Yeah.
So what? And you're also on this Netflix series now called Florida Man. Are you allowed to talk about that today?
I can talk about some of it. Yeah.
What does it mean to you to be a Florida man?
Well, you know, it was hard to adapt to Florida when I first moved here in 93. I was 12. And because I wasn't a Florida man, I was, you know, from D.C. and, you know. Raised pretty well up there and then moved down here, and these kids are raised completely different. I mean, we used to go to, you know, we just had great field trips up in DC because there's all these free museums to go to, and just very educational, very diverse up there too. And moved down to Florida, and it was like segregated, and the only place they took us on a field trip and was to the county jail and Ruth Eckerd Hall to see some puppets. I was like, okay, great. Welcome to Florida. Thanks, Dad.
Wait, why did they take you to the jail?
I don't know. It's like, you know, they took us there in eighth grade, and then it was like June of 95, and then December of 95, I was getting arrested for the first time. So I'm like, all right, cool. So 6 months later, there I am getting arrested for the first time at 14 years old. Florida man.
Florida man is born. What did you get arrested for when you were 14?
I was with a kid that was shoplifting at Walmart, and I was an accomplice. So
gotcha.
Since I was with him, I had to get arrested too, and even though I didn't steal anything.
What was he shoplifting?
Baseball cards.
Oh.
And he's dead now. He got shot in the face in 2014 over baseball cards. Or 2004. Yeah, 2004. He got shot in the face.
That's
over cards.
Very sad and unnecessary.
Never found his killer. Yeah, but, you know, that could have been me.
Shit.
God rest your soul, Nick. Hope you're watching this right now.
Yes, all the respect to Nick. So remember whenever you and I were both in LA a few years ago, and you were like really adamant that you were ready to go home and that you would rather be in Florida, and Florida is the place that you want to live forever. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, I mean, it was more home to me than LA was. I mean, LA was just, it was cool for the first couple of weeks. And then it was always by the 28th day that I was out there is where I started feeling depressed. And even though it's a very overpopulated city, it's also the most loneliest city that I've ever been in.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It was just, you know, cause you knew where I was living with a few actors in one place and then another few actors in another place. It was just like, it was depressing, you know, like I couldn't be around acting all the time. It's like I lost that feeling of just feeling like a regular dude. And I like being a regular dude when I'm here in Florida. I've got, you know, my regular friends and just, you know, people that aren't in the business too. And, you know, it just, it keeps me grounded of who I really am.
That's,
you know, because I'm never going to be one of those, you know, actors you see on the award shows and stuff and smacking people in the face.
If you were at an award show, though, could you ever see yourself smacking someone in the face?
No,
never.
No, I wouldn't do that. Not over words, man. It's a joke, you know?
Yeah, definitely. If, you
know, and I'm not going to take my anger out on somebody when I should have really been angry at, you know, the wife.
Yeah. Yeah. There was more going on there. But I think that's an interesting point that you made about not wanting to be. I mean, you don't want to be around actors 24/7 talking about acting?
No, I mean, if I'm a series regular, sure. But it's like, I need to have that healthy balance in between, you know, everything's much different now, you know, with COVID and, you know, I've worked on many sets recently. But I didn't hang out with any of my co-stars. That was the first time I didn't get to hang out with any of my co-stars because everybody's frayed and locked down and masking up and staying in their room. And, you know, I get it. We got to follow protocol, but it's, you know, it becomes even more lonelier because you don't get to know your castmates anymore. You know, and when you're talking to people on set, it's like you kind of have to nod your head like you heard them because you don't want to ask them over and over to repeat themselves because you can't hear or understand what they're saying because they have a fucking mask on. Yeah. Am I allowed to cuss? Shoot.
Yes, you're allowed to cuss.
No, it's just frustrating because I do like to get to know the actors that I'm working with. I do like to hear it's very interesting when I hear their stories of how they came up and what obstacles they had to go through to get where they're at today. And, you know, I appreciate that because I've started from the bottom, you know, and I didn't get any favors. I had to work every single role that I have. I had to bust my ass for it. So when like people ask me, you must have like friends that like give you a favor every once in a while. No, I wish I had friends like that. Oh, God.
Maybe you haven't made the right friends yet.
No. I haven't been accepted into the senior circle. Right now, I'm still a freshman. I'm trying to get into the cool party.
Right.
And yeah, I'm still being denied access, unfortunately. So I'm trying to be one of the cool kids.
Well, okay. So I think like probably your most known character that you've played was the character you played on Vice Principals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't people come up to you in LA like a couple of times and be like, weren't you that guy on Vice Principals?
I thought we were out one night and somebody asked me, I've been in LA, I've been in New York, and somebody, you know, recognized me from that, or it's usually from that. And somebody recognized me from it while I was in Florida. And I was just getting tacos on Taco Tuesday at Tijuana Flats. And, hey man, are you that guy from Vice Principals? So like, yeah. What are you doing in Largo? I was like, I don't know, living and eating tacos. Okay.
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking. Like, probably, like, you and I are used to the idea of you can be an actor and be on film and television and not be living in New York or LA. But I think most people generally don't understand how that's possible. So that's where this, like, this regional acting situation mm-hmm. comes into play. So I feel like maybe, I don't know, maybe we should discuss that. Like, do you like and this ties into the documentary I'm working on, of course, that you were also a part of, the Stroke of Luck documentary about my dad. Yeah. And it's about the regional acting market and the whole situation, how it affects all of us that are involved in it. So what do you think? So like you live in Florida and like, tell me where the last few jobs that you had were location wise.
Yeah. I live in Florida. So the last few jobs I had, I did two jobs in Atlanta back to back. And then I did one in Wilmington, North Carolina, and another in New Orleans. So
all these cities in the Southeast that all have a lot of productions, Wilmington, Atlanta, and New Orleans, they all like, there's a lot of work there. So you're able to work in these oftentimes good roles. Like you've recurred, you know, as I guess you've been recurring guest star recently on some of these shows. So these are like good, good big roles that you are able to book as a regional actor. What are the pros and cons of this situation for you?
Well, you know, the pros and cons. The pros and cons is, yes, I'm getting, you know, seen first or whatever, but at the same time, like I use two different agencies. I use one in LA and then I use one in I use a couple here in the Southeast. And you know, LA gets mad that I didn't book through them because I would get paid more money through LA, but I'm not getting the same opportunities. I'm not getting the same auditions. I rarely get Southeast auditions through my LA agency. It's usually I usually read for stuff in Canada or LA or New York, and that's it. So, you know, they can't really tell me, hey, why don't you read through us? I'm like, well, I didn't get anything from you, and I'm not going to turn it down because I have to work. I need new footage and I need health insurance for my family.
Yeah.
So, you know, but yeah, another con would be, yes, these are big roles, but at the same time, you feel like you're cheap sometimes, you know, because you're not being paid what you're worth. But I felt like I had to rebuild completely going into 2021. I had all this footage with this long hair and that Fu Manchu and the same look, and that wasn't working for me anymore. And I just, you know, I felt like I needed to reinvent myself. And I changed my look completely, cut my hair off, I mean, different beard style. And I was like, I'm going to try it this way and see what happens. And then all of a sudden, within 6 weeks of changing my look, I started booking on a roll. And now I just take these opportunities when I'm on set. Like I used to always just mind my P's and Q's and just, you know, go deliver your lines and go back to your trailer. That's it. Now I'm just like, no, I'm 40 years old now. So I'm done wasting time. I go and see who the writers and producers are. And I'm like, hey, I pitch them my ideas with the character, what the fans might like. And they're like, you know what? We like that idea. And then I end up being, you know, I'm going to be a recurring role on Cobra Kai, you know, in season 5. But can't say what that role is at all. But that's all I'll say. It was supposed to be a one and done role. It turned into a few episodes. So, you know, it's just you have to shoot your shot and you take a risk. And the worst they can say is no.
Yeah.
And all these times, all these years, I was afraid to like go up and I got an idea. Because, you know, it's like, you know, getting pushed out of a senior party, you know, you're afraid of that. But now I'm just like, no, man, I deserve to be here. Good enough to be here. Here's my idea. You don't like it. No hard feelings. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like a hard lesson to learn. I feel like I've felt like that before, and I have been the person who's like, you know, I don't feel like anybody cares what I have to say. I don't feel like I have the, you know, like, because a lot of times, too, as an actor on a set, if you're not like one of the main cast or the star of the show or whatever, like the rest of the crew doesn't really pay that much attention to you. It's like it is like that. Like, just, you know, we're all over, you know, whoever the leads are on this show or movie or whatever. And then everybody else is kind of just a cog in the machine. So it can feel really intimidating to do that. So
it does. And, you know, absolutely. But I guess every set is different. And then you are going to, you know, get some of those guys that are open to your ideas.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I was, you know, I rolled the dice that day and they were completely open and you know, they loved it. And they ended up using one of my ideas. And I was like, all right, cool. You know, and it felt good to be a part of that. And then I remember, you know, talking to like the set PA. He's like, yeah, man, it's a good thing you're back, because they're so open to ideas here. And I'm like, oh, I'm good. I'm glad. Yeah, you know, and you know, with Florida Man and that show, they let me improv a lot. Both are, you know, comedic roles, and they let me improv, which was great. And you know, because a lot of the times you'll get,
hey, we're kind of a stickler for the words around here. Do you need to go memorizing your trailer some more? Because we don't do the improv here.
Like, oh yeah, I forgot I'm on Lifetime Network right now.
Yeah, that's frustrating too, because sometimes like you get on a show and you improv something off the cuff and everybody loves it and you get great feedback and everybody's like bragging on you about that. And then on another show, you walk in and it's completely different. And if you do that, then it's like people are pissed off and they're like, you know, just let's keep it exactly.
Yeah. Or also when you're recurring and you're working with different directors and you're trying to keep that same energy of the character that you've been already using, and then it kind of gets shot down with the next director where it was like, no, this is what I've been doing previously. Let's keep it the same.
Yeah, with different directors on the same series directing different episodes in a row.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, Florida Man was a lot of fun though. I mean, I really, really enjoyed my time there, and I can't wait for that to come out, but I'm just glad they let me just be me, you know?
So when will that show come out? Do you know yet?
I don't know. It's the same producers as Ozark, and they're getting ready to release the second half of, the series finale for Ozark this month. So I'd imagine once that comes out, then they'll have an update. But I don't know. My feeling would be summertime, like July, August, Florida weather. Oh, it's always Florida.
Florida time.
So are you on every episode?
No, I'm in 5 out of 8 episodes.
Okay. Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So can you say anything about what the show's about or what you do on the show at all or what your character's like?
So Edgar Ramirez is the star. His name is Mike Hart, and he is an ex-cop that gets involved with the Philly mob, which I'm part of the Philly mob. So my boss, I'm the right-hand man to my boss, Moss Yankov, played by Emery Cohen. And Edgar Ramirez's character gets in a gambling debt, and then he has to pay off this gambling debt by working for my boss and doing odd jobs here and there. My boss's girlfriend, because we're all in Philly, we're all based in Philly. And then my boss's girlfriend heads off to Florida, and he sends Mike off to go find her, and it just gets in this big old wild odyssey chase. And yeah, there's murder, comedy, and you know, it's probably the best writing I've ever been a part of, aside from True Detective. I mean, True Detective was great. It was some great writing on there, but I had such a small role on there. This is like, you know, a big part.
So you mean to tell me that you're not even playing a Florida man, even though you are a Florida man and you're on a show called Florida Man, you're playing a Philly man.
So my character, he kind of talks like this a little bit. And I think he's got like a twist of Joey from Friends with a little pinch of Cosmo Kramer.
You know, he's just kind of all over the place. He's a bad guy, but he's a likable bad guy, and he's such an idiot that you can't help but like him. And you know, a lot of people on set were saying, you know, we feel like you have the best character on the show. I'm like, all right, cool, tell that to the writer.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. So where did you shoot that?
That was Wilmington.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah, well, there's no tax credits here in Florida. Our governor won't write off for it. So he doesn't believe in tax incentives in Florida. He thinks we're overpopulated here enough, which we are pretty overpopulated now.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. The housing market is nuts here.
I wanted to talk to you about your experience on True Detective, but you were there with me the night that I got fired.
Yep, I remember.
What do you remember about that?
Let's see. I remember we were both on that same episode. We were there at the same time in New Orleans. I don't think I was working that day. I think I had just gotten into town or something. I was hanging out at the Texas Roadhouse there on the West Bank. And then you stood your ground and, you know, I stick by you 100% on that. I was very sad for you when you got fired. And then I remember, you came and met me at the Texas Roadhouse right as they were closing. And then I just remember giving you a hug. And then we just took off to TGI Fridays. And then we just, you know, I just listened to you and just, you know, I just told you did the right thing. You know, I would like to think I would stick up for myself too. But I don't know. There's moments where I just kind of like freeze because I'm so in shock of what's being said to me or how I'm being treated that I don't know. I do notice myself lock up. I mean, there was a time where I was working on a show where I had, you know, torn tendons in my arm, and I still went through with the stunt, but that was my own fault. You know, I agreed to do it and said, don't hire a stunt guy. I was in so much pain. That was the only time where I really didn't want to do it. I wish I had a stunt guy, but at the same time, I was so worried about it getting back to my agent. You know, is this guy a pussy? You know, no, I just had tears in my tendons. It's very painful.
So what was your experience like on True Detective? You were actually in the famous scene that was like the 9-minute tracking shot where it was all continuous.
That was brutal. I mean, because there was 88 people involved in that scene and it's six minutes and 18 seconds of uncut. And we had to rehearse all week and then shoot it. And I just remember Matthew McConaughey, all right, so some of us are going to get beat up. Some of us are going to get hurt. And boom, he was the first one to get hurt because somebody threw that brick through the glass through the window and that candy glass went right in his, I can't see. Oh man. And then next thing, I'm supposed to be pistol whipping some guy and hitting a bloody pillow. And then I've got, you know, like this rubber gun and I'm hitting this bloody pillow. And then my hand hits the bloody pillow, slides off of it and then smacks on the terrazzo floor. And then I had a little break in my hand and a giant contusion. And I just remember trying to like hide it. It's bleeding, you know, and I'm just like trying to, you know, cause I have that fear of being replaced, you know, I don't want to be replaced. And so I just kind of hide it and people see the blood. And then, you know, the director was like, oh, what are you doing, man? He's like, that's your hand. I was like, yeah. He's like, why don't you tell me you hurt it or you broke it? I remember saying, I don't want to give you an excuse not to rehire me ever again. I said, where would you get that from? I said, my acting teacher. Well, your fucking acting teacher's nuts, man. We're changing that. And then they changed it to just me shooting the guy in the face, which played out better.
But he just replaced me on the same show.
But that was before that this happened before that.
Oh, you shot. Are you sure? Because your hand wasn't broken whenever I came and met you at Texas Roadhouse. I feel like you hadn't shot anything when I got fired.
I hadn't? I can't remember.
I don't know. You were staying at that shitty motel and...
No, I don't know. I can't remember which one. But I remember making three trips up there and we stayed at that horrible Roadway Inn where it was like a halfway house. I'm like, I can't believe you're staying here. It's like, well, they didn't give me a hotel.
Yeah, that was fucked up.
$67 a night to stay at this awful, you know, Roadway Inn on the West Bank Expressway.
Yeah, it was a murder motel.
It was. It really was. But, you know, I was, you know, one of those guys that had that mentality, get rich or die trying. You know? That was my mentality. Like, I, you know, I don't have that mentality anymore, obviously. But that was like, I don't know. It felt good at times to have that drive because you just, you know, you go into it with all these like dreams and aspirations and also preconceived notions of how the business is. But I don't know. I'm not saying I don't have that same drive, but I don't have that same hunger. I guess it's less desperation.
Like years and years of just being beaten down by the industry.
Uh-huh.
Would you say you have a love-hate relationship with your acting career?
Oh, absolutely. Because it's so erratic. When it's up, it's up. When it's down, it's down. You know, I mean, it's like you're sky high 1 minute because you're booking on these great roles. And then sometimes when they air, you think it's, you know, it's going to change and something, somebody's going to notice and you're going to get more work from it, of course. And nothing comes out of it, you know, because I hadn't really done anything since Vice Principals that really has done anything for my career. And that aired 2016.
Yeah. And you've still been working like consistently all the time.
But nothing that I've done in between has really said, oh, that's that guy from, oh yeah. Because that role in Vice Principals got me a lot of work from other, because people like producers came up to me. I loved your role in Vice Principals. I was like, we got to have this guy. And I just did a very small role in Killing It. And the producer came up to me and goes, I loved you on Vice Principals. I was like, we got to have this guy. So, you know, and they, you know, they paid me very well for that very tiny role. And I was like, I couldn't refuse that. I was like, I'll do it. I don't care. So, you, like I said, I got kids to feed, motherfucker.
How do you deal with comparison, like of yourself and your peers? Because I feel like that's something that I struggle with, you know, like on, because I have, you know, been through my own struggles with my acting career. I feel like it's hard sometimes to see what other people are doing that, you know, and to like, to stay focused on yourself and to remember that like everybody's path is different. Do you ever feel like you struggle with that?
I have in the past for sure. You know, cause when I was skinny, I was like, okay, I feel like I gotta be the biggest motherfucker there, you know? And I had that, you know, stuck in my head for a while and I got huge. But you know, nowadays I try to just be the best in my category. You know, I try to stand out, you know, in my audition, you know, because most guys that are built like me and look like me, you know, aren't, you know, I hate to say it, they're not really the best of actors. You know, we get typecast as humans, you know, that we're big, dumb animals. And it's not always the case. A lot of us are pretty smart, you know, but a lot of these big guys that get into it, they get into it, not because they love acting. It's just somebody's like, you look cool. You should be an actor.
Yeah.
Okay. I can say some lines.
Yeah. You know?
Like then I get thrown in that category just because some guy's an idiot and sucks at what he does. That,
yeah.
Oh, he looks like the same type of muscle meathead idiot like that guy. You know, they put us in a category, which sucks.
Yeah.
But that's why I'm like, all right, well, you know, whatever. I'll try to be the best in my category.
I think that's true, though. You definitely have more depth than all of the, I mean, I don't consider you like the average meathead guy, even though you look like it.
Yeah, I was never this way. I mean, I didn't start working out until I was 30. Yeah, I never worked out in high school. I was 150 pounds when I graduated high school at 6'5". And I'm 6'5", now I'm 255 now. So I'm 100, like I was seeing one of my old teachers that hasn't seen me since I was, you know, 18. And he's like, God, how much weight did you gain? 50 pounds. I said, 105.
Okay, so last two things that I wanted to talk about. We didn't talk about how we met, which was we were both in Homefront. And Homefront. That was, what year was that? Do you remember? Because I don't.
Oh, yeah, it was 2012.
Okay, so we shot that in New Orleans, and you played a character that was kind of like the sidekick to my dad's bad guy character. And you guys were the two local henchmen in this like country town where Jason Statham's character ends up. And the main henchman was James Franco. And then you two were kind of like the local, the local henchmen guys. So you and my dad, had already like started working together by the time I came in, and I was only there. I only worked for one day on that, and I was just playing a little, like a little meth head in a house full of meth heads that were cooking meth. So what was that whole experience like for you? Wasn't that like, because that was when you were first starting out.
Yeah.
And I was too.
I was about 3 years in, but that was my first theatrical film that I'd ever done. And that was my first time. That was my second time in New Orleans, but that was my first time working in New Orleans. And it was a great experience for me. You know,
did you have to do a lot of stunts and stuff that you weren't used to? What was it like working with Jason Statham?
Yeah, I mean, I did have to do a little some stunts there that I wasn't used to, and I just had to like knock off the rust because like the first scene when we're doing that whole gas station, you know, I wasn't like as agile I was as I was in the second seeing the boathouse, because I was just trying to, like, you know, get acclimated again to taking hits and bouncing back up and then you know, my get my good energy, man, good energy. That's all they kept preaching on the set. And then, you know, Jason Statham, me and your dad are drowning him in that little watering trough. And and then Jason Statham gets mad because I like to have my forearm, like,
yeah, I have this forearm on my spine. He's like, damn it. This guy, he can't even drown me properly. If he can't drown me properly, then I'm just going to leave and everybody's just have an early fucking day.
I was like, oh shit. And then the director looks at me like, don't fuck this up. And the stunt coordinator, like, please don't fuck this up. Cause I was like terrified that I was going to shut down production. And your dad looks at me like, yeah, man, I'm feeling sorry for you, but yeah.
You can't drown me, Owen. I can hold my breath for 3 fucking minutes.
It's like, okay. And I was, but at that moment, I was so fucking livid, probably the most livid I've ever been on any fucking set, that I was so angry where I didn't care if I got fired or not. I was like, fuck this motherfucker. I was like, I'm gonna really drown the shit out of him. And I just was like, you guys ready? He's like, we gotta get it on this take. And your dad's like, we gotta get it on this take, man. I was like, I ain't fucking know. And I dunked him in there, dunked his head in the water, and I'm like holding him down there. And I keep holding it, and I'm just like, really, just keep going. And your dad looks at me like, you want to get him up or what? And I was like, fuck no. Absolutely not. And I was just like, finally lit him up. And then Statham fucking pukes up all this fucking water. And they used that take in the movie, because that was him really throwing up fucking water, because he was like, you can't drive me. I was like, all right, okay. And then he and I, Jason and I, are watching the playback, and he's like, all right. He's still a little dazed because he was like, really, you know. And then I said, was that good enough for you? He said, yeah, mate, give me a hug. And he just gave me a hug, and he hugged it out, and we were good after that. But at that moment, I was just like, you know, because still, that's just me being a regular dude, regular Florida man, not giving a fuck if I get fired. Because I turned that job down because they first told me they were going to give me a hotel. And I was like, no, absolutely not. It's like, I'm not doing it, you know? And then they were like, okay, we'll give you a hotel. It's like, okay, thank you.
The bare minimum.
Yeah. I was like, Jesus Christ, man. Cause I had like $400 to my fucking name. You know, I was a construction worker. I think I just got laid off or something at that time. So like job, it was still during the recession, you know, 2012. So, you know, jobs were few and far between, you know, it wasn't booming like it was in 07 and 08. So that's, you know, I did that, did what I could. And then of course, you know, when I worked in the pawn shops,
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that was the last thing I wanted to ask you about, was your work at the pawn shop. That was like, how many years did you, like, tell me all these crazy stories about working at the pawn shop?
Because I would do that while I was a carpenter as well. I would do both. And there was, you know, there's like a time I worked there a year in 07. Then I went back in like 2012 or 2013 and did it for a little bit here and there. And but it was just like, it was just character study for me. You know, I hated that job, fucking hated it. But, you know, I hated dealing with all those crackheads and heroin addicts every day. And
hey, man, what you gonna give me for this, man?
Like, oh, I hated it. But that was the thing. I always wanted to just do a job that I didn't really like, so that I wouldn't let it get in the way of my dream. Because I hated, you know, being a carpenter. I hated, you know, working at the pawn shop, because I didn't want to get comfortable, you know. Plus, it, you know, gave me the freedom just to take off whenever I wanted.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, but I did a lot of character study in that place. And I use some of the characters today that I met in there. So thankful that's me turning a negative into a positive. So
didn't you carry a gun when you were in there?
Yep.
Did you ever have to use it or pull it on anybody?
I had pulled it one time. Yeah, I pulled it one time in 2000. 7. Yeah. but yeah, I carried a, what did I, 38 special. Yeah.
Well, good thing things never got too wild and crazy in there, or else, you know, you might not be here to tell the tale.
No. I don't know why they gave us fucking guns in there. They just wanted us to protect their merchandise. But, you know, we had crazy motherfuckers come in there and fucking rush us because we sold guns. We took guns in and pawned. So you knew, you never knew what somebody was going to come through that door with. And I would, I'm not wearing a fucking vest. And it's a horrible part of town. I mean, it was in the armpit of this fucking county. Leelman. Leelman is so tiny, but that's where it was, in the fucking armpit.
You've been through it. There.
Oh, yeah. Went through it. We had a little sign out front my buddy put out that says, "Baby daddy doing you wrong? We'll pawn, we'll buy his gold all day long." Where's the manager? The manager had made him take it down after one day. "That's say we buy so much stuff. Down." Fuck, well, that was pretty clever.
All right. That was real-life Florida man Owen Harn. Interesting guy. And if you want to see clips of the video of my conversation with Owen, check it out on YouTube. That's where they will be. Okay, it's time for the movie of the week. The movie of the week is Training Day. Yes, Training Day. Came out in 2001 with Ethan Hawke and Denzel Washington. Ethan Hawke and Denzel both won the Oscar for their performances in this movie. Ethan Hawke for Best Supporting Actor and Denzel for Best Actor. And I just watched this movie for the first time the other day. And oh my God, it was incredible. And it's on HBO Max right now. So you can just pop it on anytime. And it's definitely worth watching. There's so many good movies that came out around that time period. I feel like the early 2000s, I feel like sometimes we forget or we don't give enough credit to the early 2000s movies, but Training Day is incredible. I love Denzel Washington. I love just watching him work. Everything he does is fascinating and riveting. And I honestly just cannot get enough Denzel Washington. And this was one of his best roles ever. It's directed by Antoine Fuqua. And I mean, everything about it is incredible. The script is great. The direction is great. All of the camera moves are just so intentional and dramatic. And the scenes are all so tense and so tight. And the movie's exciting. And you don't know what's going to happen next. And it has these awesome, like, highly choreographed, really inventive fight scenes and incredible one-liners. And Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre are both in this movie. It's a gangster-ass movie from start to finish. And everybody in the movie is perfectly cast. Everybody is fan-fucking-tastic. If you've ever heard the iconic line, "King Kong ain't got shit on me," I don't know if that line is actually iconic or if in my mind it's iconic, but that's from this movie. It's absolutely incredible. You have to watch it if you haven't seen it. Everyone needs to see this movie, especially if you like gritty dramas and gritty action pictures. You're gonna love this movie. I think I'm adding it to my list of top favorite movies, honestly. And I'm gonna be watching it again. And I can't stop thinking about it. And that's what you wanna feel after you see a movie. Can't stop thinking about it. So check it out. Let me know what you think. Let me know what you think about just whatever. Check out the Patreon, patreon.com/Raiden for the exclusive content and the new trailer for my film Hellish that I just dropped over there. All right. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed this episode. We're figuring it out as we go. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being here with me. And I'll speak to you.